Child, touch my soul with your cries, and the music will know what we found. I hear a hundred goodbyes, but today I hear only one sound. The moment we're living.
Welcome back to the Bruce Salen Show at Dad's Point of View. I'm Bruce Salen, and you can email me questions at bruce@brucesalen.com. You can follow me at Twitter at Bruce Salen. That's Bruce and Salen, S-A-L-L-A-N. That's S like in solos. Because my next guest is Heather Solos, who has agreed to talk about the recent suicide of her sister, Laura, in order to help everyone understand the far-reaching effects of this tragedy of suicide. Laura Smith was the youngest sister of Heather Solos. They grew up in Low Country of South Carolina in a typical suburban household. Like many children of the time, they were latchkey kids, and Heather played a big part in the upbringing of her youngest sibling. August 22nd, 2013, at 5:14 a.m., Heather received a call that brought her world to a standstill. Laura had shot herself, was in an ambulance en route to a hospital in Tacoma, Washington, and not expected to survive. 4 days later, life support was removed, and with her family at her side, she passed. Laura was a beautiful young woman who left behind extreme emotional pain, questions, and grief for more people than she could possibly have known. Heather is a mother of three and still lives in Low Country, and is using the resources she has from a career built on social media to help ensure more effort is spent on creating awareness and sharing resources available for the prevention of suicide. Welcome to the show, Heather.
Thank you for having me.
Again, we've spoken a lot over the last few weeks, but my condolences. As we're preparing to do Dad Chat tonight, and I see the outpouring of love for your sister, it just reminds me so gravely how suicide has such an important and incredibly difficult effect. Those aren't the right words, the right adjectives, but on the survivors. I know that most people that probably do kill themselves don't really think that in the moment, in their grief, their depression, whatever. But there are a lot of survivors, and you've been enduring a lot. So I'd love you to share your story from the beginning or wherever you'd like to pick it up.
Okay. I've been going under some of my own life changes, and I had recently moved into a new house, and I received a call from my sister. And I had guardianship of her when she was 15. I was 20 at the time, and that's too young to handle a teenager. You know, teenagers are fun at any time, but but things didn't go like Party of Five. And so
it's not like TV?
No, it's not. Getting through young adulthood is hard enough. And then when you add the stress of a teenager, I just couldn't handle it. And so we had a falling out. And we were gradually, over the course of the last few years, starting to talk. You know, we'd see each other at family events, but we weren't super close. But she called me on July 13th and asked me a couple questions about ending marriage. And
about what?
About ending marriage. About how to end a marriage.
Was she married at the time?
What'd you say?
Was she married at the time?
She was, but they were separated. They were in the process of separating. And so the point is that I ended up cutting that phone call short because people were beginning to arrive at my house marking the start of a new life for myself. And so I have a bit of survivor's guilt associated with this. But when I received the call on August 22nd,
So you didn't speak to her between those two calls?
No, I did not. I tried to call her back, and I was worried about the husband monitoring phone calls, and I was scared I would start something, that I would cause some kind of grievance. And I was a coward and didn't reach out when I should have.
No, you did what you thought was right in the moment. It's so easy to second-guess yourself after the fact. So give yourself some slack here. You did the best thing you could in the moment. I'm sorry.
The point is the phone call, the phone rang, and it's my mother, and I couldn't quite understand what she was saying because she was so hysterical. She was saying that Laura had shot herself and was in an ambulance and was being taken to a hospital. Now, since Laura and I weren't super close, I wasn't sure if she was in Seattle proper or where she was. And so there was a lot of confusion. I didn't know what hospital she was being taken to at first. And eventually the chaplain managed to get a hold of my father and told him that she was not expected to live and we should make arrangements immediately if we wanted to say goodbye.
Was she unconscious from that point forth?
She never regained consciousness. She opened her eyes one time, but it was a lower brainstem reflex. The damage she had done was to the did not kill her immediately, obviously. It took out the frontal lobe where your personality resides. Uh-huh. Basically, they call it the operation center. It's the part that makes who you are who you are.
So that was gone immediately.
Yeah. So Laura was sent, the slate was wiped clean. She was no longer there. She was the shell of the person.
Mm-hmm. Literally.
And the next few days were like living in one of those medical dramas on TV where they don't cut out any of the waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no cut to commercials and, hey, new exciting revelation. No, it's sit there and be told that you need to wait 72 hours for the swelling to go down to be absolutely sure. But she's not going to live. You need to wait.
And there's no fast forwarding to the happy ending either that television often provides.
Right. Yeah, there was no happy ending. We knew there was no happy ending. I remember mm-hmm. this woman coming up to me in the waiting room of the floor. And she told me, we're praying for a miracle. She'll pull through. And I couldn't help it. I looked at her and I said, no, the miracle would be that this didn't happen. The miracle now is that she passes peacefully.
Right.
And I had just read the book, The Universe Versus Alec Woods. And it's a fantastic novel. And it actually deals with the subject of dying with dignity.
Mm-hmm.
And because she was unsuccessful in her suicide attempt, that was the only gift we could give her. Because she, without
life support... You mean pulling the plug, you mean, at the point after the... right.
Right. And she would have no life without artificial respiration. And it was really... The worst part was when the doctor came, when the second opinion doctor came to give his... view on it. And he started off like in the sort of hopeful tone. And we're like, we're not looking for hope because we know the answer. We just want to make sure the first doctor is correct. He only brought you in here so we wouldn't second guess.
Hmm.
Because we'd seen the CT scans and they couldn't do an MRI because of the bullet fragments. It wouldn't work. But she, when we removed life support, she gave us a gift, and it was that she didn't pass quickly enough to be a viable organ donor because you have to pass within 60 minutes. And she could still be a tissue donor, so she's still able to help many more people after she passed. Mm-hmm. But because she didn't pass away in that short amount of time, she actually ended up bringing my family together in a way it had never been together. And for the first time...
Meaning that you were all there...
In the same room.
Comforting each other. Yes, I got
you. Yeah, sharing stories. And at one point, somebody commented, well, she never got ready to go anywhere in a hurry, so why would we expect her to now?
Mm.
And it's that whole Steel Magnolias laughter through tears kind of moment. And she finally slipped away peacefully, which was the only thing she had left to give.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So let's fast forward a little bit to where you are now. Obviously grieving is an ongoing process of ups and downs, and I believe very much in the various stages of grief
mm-hmm.
that, what's her name, that I'm the famous writer about grief and loss, Kubler-Ross.
Right.
Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. I believe very much that we all go through it, and I imagine you have had those and probably even recognize those stages. But what I love that you're doing is you're channeling some of that grief into a proactive movement or effort, I should say, not movement, to just educate people about suicide, what you could do, what to look for. And where that's part of what we're doing tonight at Dad Chat. And when you reached out to me, it was not a difficult decision. Because we're not afraid to take on the tough topics, and I believe that that's what we can do as human beings, is take our grief or take our gifts, if we're lucky, and give back to the world. So tell us how you're doing that and how it's helped you, deal with this.
Well, I was speaking with a friend of mine, and he asked me, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to just sit there and grieve, or are you going to work and channel your success to making sure that fewer families have to deal with what you've just gone through?
And explain yourself, because I know it, but other people don't know how that would work here.
Well, I work in social media, and I work for a company, and we're small but growing. And we basically what he was telling me is to work hard, make a lot of money, and start a foundation in her honor. And that is my long-term plan.
I love that.
For now, though, I'm going to use the tools that I have, however I have them, whether it's talking to somebody face-to-face on the radio or through social media.
Well, when you want to do that fundraiser, once you get started, let's do that on Dad Chat. I love to raise money through Dad Chat and social media. So we'll figure that out. But let's go on with other things you're doing. And actually, I would love you to share just a couple takeaways for our listeners as things you might do differently, if you could go back in time, and things, more importantly, that you would recommend that others look out for when they maybe have a loved one, a friend, or whatever that is in some form of crisis.
If it's somebody who has never reached out for help before, call back. Because the amount of strength it took them to get to reaching out the first time may have been all they had.
Okay.
If somebody talks about themselves as though they are worthless, pay attention. That's a huge warning sign. And if you suspect that they may not be in the best relationship, pay extra attention.
Would you agree with me that any attempt, even a feeble attempt, needs to be taken seriously?
Without a doubt. While I was looking at the statistics this morning to review for tonight, only about 1 in 100 are successful. That one life matters.
Sure
but
does.
All those other attempts, that's somebody who is sick or hurting in some way, and they can get help through maybe it's therapy, maybe they need medication. I don't know the answer, but if that's what it takes to get them the help they need, then that's what it takes, and we should offer it.
Yes, I agree. Now, you know, the irony and the sadness is Laura chose a method that is less prevalent among women. Because as you probably know, the statistics, men are more successful at suicide, but women make more attempts. The reason men are more successful is they tend to be more violent in their choice of how to do it, whereas women tend to do less violence. Sadly, Laura chose one of those violent choices where rescue or recovery was less likely. I wish she had taken pills and called somebody like a lot of women do.
Right.
Would you care to share anything about the statistic and that kind of odd gender reality with our listeners?
Well, it's led to a lot of questions that we'll never have answers to because it is so out of character for her and it is so out of character just from an anthropological standpoint. You know, as her family, now we're never going to know for sure.
Okay, what you meant, just I want to clarify, what you meant from an anthropological standpoint, I believe, is that women and guns, in many cases, just don't go together. And maybe Laura, in particular, choosing a gun was another shock to the family system.
It was. She was held up at gunpoint in her early 20s, and she did not like firearms at all. So
this really, it does. And that's one of the most painful things I think suicide, people that commit suicide leave behind is sometimes there are no notes. And then there's all these questions. And as you said, there's all this survivor guilt. Everybody thinks, well, if I had done this, if I had done that, if I had done this. And that's inescapable.
Right.
Except as a survivor, you have to forgive yourself. And you have to rally around the rest of your family and your surviving family. And yourself. Plus what you're doing, which is a legacy to others. Okay, I think that's the best thing you can do. So, listen, I could
real
talk
quick,
to you for a
long friend of
time.
Mine said something very, very accurate today. He said he thinks about the pain like a peat bog fire. It will burn underground for a long time, maybe forever, but at some point the damage becomes manageable.
Well, I hope the same for you and your family. We will carry this on further tonight at Dad Chat. I think this is a topic I'd love to discuss further, not because I like it, but because it's important. So I hope you'll come back to the show, Heather. And I will, in quotes, see you tonight It is time for Spiritual Rap with Pastor Drew. So everyone, please stay tuned. And Heather, again, thank you very much.
Turn it all around. Ever since time, nothing's ever been found stronger than love.